A person walking along a high road sees a great river. Its near bank, dangerous and frightening. Its far bank, safe. They collect sticks and foliage, make a raft, paddle across the river, and reach the other shore. Now suppose that after they reach the other shore, they take the raft from their head wherever they go. Would they be using the raft in the appropriate way? No. A reasonable person will realize that the raft has been very useful to them in crossing the river and arriving safely on the other shore, but that once they've arrived, it is proper to leave the raft behind and walk on without it. This is using the raft appropriately. In the same way, all truths should be used to cross over. They should not be held onto once you have arrived. You should let go of even the most profound insight or the most wholesome teaching, all the more so unwholesome teachings. That is a lesson from the Buddha, which is a very powerful lesson. Notice the singing through line on the hymns that we've enjoyed this morning. And I want to thank Annalise for that musical curation. And I think it's an amazing reminder that we do, in fact, need to keep the joy in our lives, even during the hard and difficult times. And among the countless words that are written and published, whispered and chanted, yodeled and sung over the course of human history, among the shredded papers and deleted files, the bonfires fueled by banned books and censorship, both active and passive, I'm going to present to you 20 words in the English language for your consideration on the morning of September 11th. Language is courage, the ability to conceive a thought, to speak it, and by doing so, to make it true. Now, those words were written, composed by a writer of great imagination and great courage. And as we enter a sermon entitled Searching for Free and Responsible, we would do well to listen once again to the words of Salman Rushdie, a sentence from his novel, The Satanic Verses. Language is courage, the ability to conceive a thought, to speak it, and by doing so, to make it true. That is what some religious and political fundamentalists have been trying to do to Salman Rushdie for decades. And with Salman Rushdie brutally attacked at Chautauqua Institution, an institution, a legendary institution that is practices deep inquiry and free thinking. Salman Rushdie attacked in the hall of philosophy. We speak aloud Salman Rushdie's words, language is courage inside this room called sanctuary. Now, the word philosophy means love of knowledge and love of wisdom. Sanctuary is the most sacred part of any religious building and a place of refuge and protection. Now, the lecture that Salman Rushdie was about to deliver was on the theme called More Than Shelter. And according to local press accounts, the topics to be discussed included, quote, the United States as a place for asylum for writers and other artists in exile, and as a home for freedom of creative expression. Now, this pulpit, 2,500 to 3,000 miles away from Chautauqua Institution, in a small town at the base of a mountain range near the edge of a continent, this is called a free pulpit. And this congregation, Skagit Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, courageously grants to whomever speaks from this pulpit freedom to say what they will, to speak their truth, to think, to feel, to articulate what they will. To give voice to ideas, to give voice to stories that might crack your heart open, that might enliven your spirit, that might stir forgotten memories, and maybe even inspire you to consider difficult or beautiful or confounding ideas, ideas that you think about when you're shopping for produce on Wednesday. And at this very moment, every person present here, whether in the sanctuary proper or online, on Zoom, we are all here now co-creating a living, a breathing, a vibrant sanctuary where freedom of thought and freedom of expression is called forth. And I want to assure everyone here that I deeply respect your creation, and I will do my best to responsibly honor your trust. And I wonder aloud whether anyone at Chautauqua Institution was instructed to remove the bloodstains of the great writer off the wooden stage in the Hall of Philosophy, whether someone with a galvanized bucket and a warm bucket of water and a scrub brush worked up a lather and soapy water turned from sudsy white to murky pink, or whether upon deeper consideration, the leadership allowed Rushdie's blood to seep in to the wood to permanently stain the floorboards. To keep this stain, this random shape, as a testament and a reminder. Now, if it were my choice, I would keep the stain. And I would invite the world's greatest photographers to record the stain in a variety of lights and a variety of angles, to publish the images of the stain for all to see, to print posters and postcards and t-shirts, to send to every library, every house of worship, every state house, every school, every city hall. And the caption would read, "Language is courage. The ability to conceive a thought, to speak it, and by doing so, to make it true." Now, starting here, at this free pulpit co-created in a room called Sanctuary, we human beings, whose hearts are currently pumping our own warm blood and who practice this liberal religion called Unitarian Universalism, we have much work to do in the world. So let's bring our generous attention and our fierce commitment and our pumping hearts and our lively minds to the fourth principle of Unitarian Universalism, quote, "a free and responsible search for truth and meaning." Now, for those of you new to UU, or for those of you who might need a quick briefing, Unitarian Universalism is a liberal religion that is by design creedless. And at its most basic, the word creedless simply means that nobody involved in this religion at any level will ever hand you a list of precepts and say, "Okay, here it is. Here's the creed. If you want to be part of our we, those are the words that you have to believe." Now, that said, Unitarian Universalism, we do share seven principles. And actually, there's an eighth principle under conversation and debate, which you can see a reflection of on the cover of the Order of Service. But currently, we have seven principles that frame and structure the religion and also provide guidance for our behavior in the world. The seven principles were not the words of a divine creator, like the Quran of Islam or the Ten Commandments of the Hebrew Bible. They were not spoken or recorded by any Messiah, like the Christian Gospels. They're not a discourse from the Buddha, nor are they sacred in any traditional religious sense. They are good ideas. They are good working ideas composed and constructed and enacted by human beings. Now, these ideas, they're made of words. They're constructed of words. They're just language. These ideas did not exist before a human being imagined and thought up the ideas. And within cosmic time, as our sun moves ever closer to its own end, and our water evaporates from the surface of the earth, our gorgeous blue planet no longer blue, the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism will also evaporate, because there's not going to be any more human beings to think and imagine and enact them. And isn't it sobering that sometimes here in Mount Vernon, we sound like French existentialists? So take heart. Currently between the nothing of before human beings existed and the nothing before the sun's going to explode and take us all with it, we have each other. We have this Sunday. We have now. We have meeting in this sanctuary, affirming and promoting and calling into being seven principles of a beautiful religion, a liberal religion. And we are that religion. There's no Unitarian Universalism outside there. It's right here, and hopefully it's right there. We put the religion into motion, and we make it manifest in the world. This is a good way to spend a portion of your life's energy and a good way to help build a just and joyous society. Now, the lack of divine authorship for the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism is in no way a diminishment of the power of those principles. Quite the opposite, in fact. Like a Bach cello suite or the Tacoma Narrows Bridge or a cultivated garden or a skillfully constructed quilt, the principles are made things, and they are made by human beings, and they are made to be both functional and beautiful. They are made to work and nourish and inspire human engagement in a complicated and complex human society that seems to be becoming ever more complex, ever more complicated with every passing news cycle. And the seven principles are also made to work together. And I understand that throughout the summer here at SUUF, there were conversations and sermons about the seven principles. So I'm honored to bring some more discussion to the table here at the first Sunday of the church year. So the seven principles, possibly soon to be eight principles, they come as a package deal, right? Their strength lies within the interplay amongst and between, in that push and pull and in any creative tensions that get created. In other words, it's fudging a bit. If you prefer one or two, you cherry pick this one, you cherry pick that one. That's the one that I follow. What I would encourage is if you find yourself dismissing one or more of the principles, it would be constructive and nutritious to explore why you feel no particular love or pull towards a principle. And while we're not going to read through the seven principles this morning, when you have some spare time this week, I really encourage you to take some time and read through them 1 to 7. They are readily available online. You can find them on wallet cards. I saw there are wallet cards out there in the foyer that you can grab. Read through them slowly, cogitate on them, admire their elegance, their brevity. Read them 1 to 7, read them 7 to 1. Imagine how human society would function if these principles served as the blueprint for society. Or more humbly, even in Mount Vernon, humbler yet, in your own home, your own heart. And while the principles exist as this interwoven and interworking and interconnected set of seven, it is also a helpful exercise to occasionally meditate on a single principle, just as you guys did all summer long, to try to understand what the words are really saying, what you believe the words to mean, how you bring the principle to life in the real world that you live in. And not to play favorites, but one of my go-to principles is number 4. Of course, the first principle is the marquee principle, right? It's the one that everybody knows, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And I always like to point out that that principle when I spent some time kind of staring that one down, I noticed that it doesn't say all people, right? Because all people is just a blur. It says every person. The first principle of Unitarian Universalism sees every person. I think that is a profound editorial move, right? Now, the inherent worth and dignity of every person is a gorgeous and necessary reminder that even the person who cut you off in traffic and even the internet troll who stole your identity is a sublime miracle made of stardust, and that they too are a fellow human being pumping their warm blood, and that that person contains inherently worth and dignity. Now, that said, it does not take too much imagination to get uncomfortable with the first principle, to plop it down in front of an extreme example to see how well it holds up. Now, more than once, after a sermon about discussing the first principle, I've been chased down in the parking lot by congregants who say to me, "Really?" And then they rattle off a short list of evildoers, right? And ask with an edge in their voice, "What about these guys?" Or after today's sermon, it is fair to ask, "What about the young man who shoved a sharp blade into Salman Rushdie's neck in front of an audience in a place called the Hall of Philosophy? Show me the worth. Show me the dignity. Even his mom has disowned him." Now, not infrequently, worth and dignity can be difficult to detect in the extreme. I get it. And yet, speaking for myself, I function better in a world believing that human consciousness has worth and dignity, that all human beings are worthy of respect. We heard a little story here today at Joys and Sorrows about 115 dogs, puppies. All of our hearts went out to those puppies, right? They deserve respect. They deserve dignity. And that every human's consciousness is rare and holy. It is precious and it is temporal. And hate to say it, but there are people who enact evil in the world, who misuse and abuse their precious gift, and that there are powerful forces within society, racism, fundamentalist capitalism, fundamentalist religion, to name three, that can blur or bury or blunt an individual's or a group's worth and dignity. Now, as we implied earlier, human society is a constructed thing. We make it up. And as such, we are responsible for helping to maintain and to improve it. Now, difficult as it can be to face and defend in the extreme, I choose to believe. I choose to practice as a default setting. Every person's consciousness is divine. Every virgin's consciousness is rare. And part of my religious practice is to recognize the divine in every person, to recognize it especially when it is not obvious. Now, I hate to break it to you, but religion may be best practiced when and where the world does not make sense. And then, of course, there's our concluding principle, number 7, that calls us to have respect for the interconnected web of all existence of which we are, interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So between those two poles, right, the inherent worth and dignity of every person and the interconnected or interdependent web of all existence, principle 7, we find number 4, the middle principle. And I love considering the structure of how this goes, because the way it's structured, the word search is literally the bullseye of Unitarian Universalism, because there are three principles before the fourth, there are three principles after the fourth, right? Then the word search is the exact middle of a nine-word sentence, right? Four words before, four words after. Now, whether that's random or not, whether that is intentional or not, the word search, absolute center currently of our seven principles. It is the middle point or the fulcrum between teeter and totter, right? Between an individual human being with inherent worth and dignity and the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Now, it is a very short word. It's a single syllable, search, that serves as both a noun and a verb. I search my search, you search your search, we search our search. And what is the goal of my, your, and our search? Well, the principle says it plainly. Truth and meaning. And how shall we search? Again, the principle says it as plain as day, free and responsible. Pardon the expression, but holy crap. Are you kidding me? Really? That sounds like a lifetime of work. Just hand me a creed, please. My goodness. And I hate to break it to you a second time, but practicing Unitarian Universalism, it ain't easy. If you walk through those doors and thinking it's a breeze because there's no creed, it's a very, very difficult religion. Again, Unitarian Universalism, we offer no sacred texts authored by a divine being. All we have is each other. All we have is our brains and our hearts and our hands and our good intentions. And of course, our search. As Reverend Paige Getty says from the book Seven Principles in Word and Worship, and I realize that the secular humanists in the sanctuary really get cranked up at the word worship. Quote, as a faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism makes sacred the right and responsibility to engage in a free and responsible quest as an act of religious devotion. Institutionally, we have left open the question of what truth and meaning are, acknowledging that mindful people will, in every age, discover new insights. That's one of the things I think about is so dynamic about our consideration of an eighth principle. This is an absolute proof positive that mindful people in every age are discovering new insights. If you feel yourself having resistance to bringing on the eighth principle, I encourage you to think about that. For a dynamic religion, we have to think about these new situations. And I love that the minister who wrote that describes the search as an act of religious devotion. And it reminds me that mindful people will, in every age, discover new insights. Because we have always been searching, always, for new insights, for truth, and for meaning. It's like, case in point, 2,500 years ago, back in Athens, Socrates walking around and hanging out with anyone eager to dialogue about, you know, truth, meaning, love, justice, friendship, state power, virtue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Topics that can be simultaneously crystal clear and murky. Ideas that can have radically varied expressions and understandings in different cultures. As you likely know, Socrates was considered the wisest of all human beings for one simple reason. Because Socrates knew that he didn't know. He kept asking questions. As Socrates says in his dialogue entitled The Apology, quote, if I am the wisest man alive, it is for I know one thing, and that is, I know nothing. Now, what I hear in that sentence from one of the intellectual taproots of Western society, search. And thus Socrates searched for a person who was wiser than he, and he would discuss with anyone who cared to try and articulate through human language the essence of deeply held human concerns such as justice and love, friendship and power. And we are still talking about those subjects today. And in Socrates' case, his search led to execution from the state. on charges of impiety and corrupting the youth. So beware. Searching and seeking and philosophizing can be as dangerous as it is life-fulfilling. And so with Socrates in mind, Salman Rushdie, recovering from his injuries, and Rushdie's attacker, presumed innocent until proven guilty, we close with a quote from the president of Chautauqua Institution. This was stated within 24 hours of the attack. Quote, "We also saw something else today that I hope we never forget. We saw some of the best of humanity, people who run toward danger. I saw Chautauquans, who are doctors and nurses, rush to provide selfless care, literally holding Salman Rushdie together until the ambulance arrived. So may we all, when called, become the best of humanity. And we certainly practice this morning by actively co-creating a free pulpit and co-creating this place called Sanctuary. And so let's savor our good fortune and our free and responsible search brought us right here, right now, this morning. And that our search, the absolute center of this faith tradition, continues responsibly and continues freely. Amen.